Go.
All right, so back for more. We are the home team presented by Golden Pantry. Eat, drink, be golden.
Well, Chris, we all know the Georgia Bulldogs, greatest college in the world, University of Georgia, greatest mascot in the world. But I'll tell you what, when it comes to logos, we've got a rival this weekend.
Georgia's going to be tested. Like if Gaylord the Camel is here, I mean tomorrow night. I mean Harry Dog's got some competition. That's what I believe with Gaylord the Camel.
And I think back, a lot of these are off of like Three Stooges. But you know, when you'd see people go to Halloween parties like dressed as a horse, it'd be two guys or a husband and a wife. That'd have to be a two person job, wouldn't it? To have a Harry Dog version, or maybe even three. If you were going with is it a bicameral, the two humps on there, maybe even a three-person getup.
Yeah, it could take more than one person to
at least two
to perform as Gaylord the Camel. So
yeah.
I don't know if they'll go through the trouble, but good luck though with that tongue twister, because that's what it is, the Campbell Camels.
The Campbell Camels.
Yeah. So you'll have your work cut out for you tomorrow night.
And the Campbell Camels take the field.
Yeah. You're just going to have to – I mean, there's no way you're not going to call them camels at some point. I don't believe. So, and camel strikes first or something. Or they bunt or steal a base or whatever they
what
do.
What would the greatest college football announcer ever have to say?
I don't think he would like.
Yeah. The camel.
And then camels. Yeah.
He might just call them camel.
Yeah.
Yeah, then Camel came in here.
Or he might just refer to them as, and the other guys have just scored.
There you go.
Yeah.
Like, there was that great audio when the Celtics, one of their great teams from the 80s with Bird and Parrish and McHale and DJ, they had made a trip over to Europe. This one, basketball was really getting big, and they played. Yugoslavia was really good, and that was kind of the – you know, where the guys like, you can help me out, like Drazen Petrovic was one of them.
Vlade Divac.
Yeah, those guys. And they did a tour over there, and you could tell he had tried to study up the names. Here's the big guy to the really big guy. Here's the left-hander.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was just fantastic listening to that.
Yeah. So Campbell, yeah, that is a tongue twister, though, the Campbell Camels. But 7:30 tomorrow night, Dogs and Camels.
You know one I mess up a lot? The Tate Student Center next to Sanford Stadium.
That's a tough one,
For the bookstore.
Yeah.
UGA bookstore next to the Tate Student Center in Sanford Stadium.
Yeah, located in the heart of campus next to the Tate Student Center next to Sanford Stadium. Because when you say Tate Student Center, what do you call it, Stanford Stadium?
I've said State before.
Oh, the State Student Center?
Yeah, Sanford Stadium, State Student Center.
Yeah. You can't call it Stanford Stadium.
Good,
that name's already
Palo
taken.
Palo Alto, yeah.
All right, we'll get into today's 5 at 5 now, brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. And we'll start with tomorrow's regional. Georgia will open postseason play for the first time since 2011, first time in Athens since 2008. So, Jeff, what have you learned that you can tell us about the Camel? I did it.
Camel?
The Campbell Camels.
Well, they're trying to encourage kids to smoke. I can tell you that.
I know, right?
That old Joe Camel there. But this is Gaylord the Camel.
Yeah.
And
we assume named after Gaylord Perry.
Because Jim Perry, his brother, who's also a terrific pitcher, went to Campbell.
And their stadium is named for him.
Yes. They love to run, Chris. 94 of 116 in the theft department. Their best player. Also, what a great name. Matthew Barefoot for the Campbell Camels.
And he leads off?
He leads off, I'm assuming. I mean, he's led off most of their games, hitting .357, 31 stolen bases in 36 tries. Again, 94 stolen bases as a team. I went by to see my buddy Chris, who does the Duke games. He does their women's hoops, too, so I met him when Duke came down here for the NCAA tournament. And they actually beat Campbell twice this year, and he said they will bunt you to death. They like to bunt. They like to run. They've also got, Chris, as I peruse the statistical ledger here, their bullpen shapes up pretty good. They've got a guy named Harry Thomas, who's 4-0, a guy with another great name for a pitcher, Logan Bender, is 5-1 with three saves. They got a closer, Tyson Messer, who's got eight saves. So they got a reliever who's 5-1. They got a reliever who's 4-0, and they got a reliever who's 3-1. Plus, they got a closer with eight saves. So that's a good bullpen. Dave was saying when they had Coach Strickland on this morning that the scouting report, Wes Noble, who will start for them tomorrow night, of their three starters, he's 7-6 with the number three ERA on the team amongst the starters, but they feel like he's been their best pitcher for the past month. So his name's Wes Noble, 67 strikeouts, 23 walks, and 73 innings, an opponent's batting average of .251. When it comes to power, they've hit 49 home runs. Their leader in home runs is a guy named Christian Jones, who has 18. He has also struck out 56 times, which kind of makes you think it's a bit of an all-or-nothing thing. And their shortstop, Luis Jimenez, 23 stolen bases, but has also made 14 errors. They field 974 as a team, hit .254, ERA 4.39. A number I always look at, though, is home run differential. They're plus 18 there. For a team that runs a lot, that's a pretty good number.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked about them on Tuesday. They've only been to two NCAA tournaments. You brought up that 1990, they're trailing 1-0 to Stanford late in the game. Chances are they had a guy and then eventually just had to turn it over to their bullpen, and then Stanford blew it open and won 7-0. But they played at South Carolina in 2014 and only lost that opener to the Gamecocks 5-2. But, you know, even with their – they like to bunt, they like to run. I mean, it's going to be a challenge. Georgia's got to be sharp defensively and be ready to throw some guys out. But, I mean, we should be able to score runs. I mean, that's the key.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, Georgia should be, you know, 7-8 runs tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, I think
offense needs to win the game.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
I mean, we got to hit these guys. And, you know, especially coming off the SEC tournament, where basically for, what, like 16 innings, the team was pretty much punchless until they woke up in the – around the seventh inning of that second game.
Along, yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's consider that, too. I mean, two of the runs Georgia scored were – I mean, they shouldn't have.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, but Georgia should have come out of Birmingham with one run scored, right, essentially.
Yep, that gave us some juice, though. But and it's kind of like if you want to compare it to football, Chris. Now, listen, all three phases have been playing great. But I remember going into the Missouri game. The defense had done such a great job. We won 45-14 against Vandy, but essentially they got a touchdown from their defense when Jacob Eason fumbled, you know, holding Mississippi State to three, shutting out Tennessee. The defense had been carrying such a load. You kind of felt like in that Missouri game, like, all right, this is a game the offense needs to win. And they did.
And they did. And I think that's kind of the case tomorrow. It's you know, you want to see Georgia's bats wake back up and show some signs of life heading into, now that the postseason is really beginning. I know the SEC tournament, I guess, is technically considered the postseason, but there wasn't much punch out there. So hopefully you see more of that tomorrow against, you know, Campbell pitching. Otherwise, then maybe you do start to worry.
But what you worry about too, though, Chris, and you and I have talked about this, Dave and I were chatting about it. If they're hanging in there, you know, let's say you line into a double play and can't get the big hit, you're only winning 3-2 in the eighth inning, and Matthew Barefoot gets a bunt single, and all your attention's over there at first base, you throw over a couple of times. Maybe there's a low throw,
on the bunt you throw it away, and then he's on second or third.
Exactly, and then all of a sudden it just gets tight. Because the deal is, you'd much rather be in Georgia's position. Georgia's got the better team. Georgia's the home team. But if Campbell hangs around, as we say, the more the underdog hangs around, the more the underdog believes it can win. And they do have a good bullpen. And they've played Duke. They've played NC State. I mean, so they're one of these schools. If you wanted to compare them to somebody, it'd be like a Kennesaw State or a Mercer. They play a lot of midweek games against ACC teams. And they're located, I was asking Chris Edwards from Duke again, and he said they're about, you know, an hour and 15 minutes away from Durham. So they're kind of close to the triangle. So they get their taste. And the Big South's one of those leagues. The top half of that conference is good. There are a lot of good programs there because, again, they're located in the South. There are a lot of good ball players down here.
Well, did they not play North Carolina? Maybe there's a story there. Do they have, like, the Tar Heels number?
They might.
North Carolina didn't want any part of them?
We'll have to look this up.
And there could be something to it. They're that close, and North Carolina doesn't play them because they played NC State. And
how bad did State beat them?
Campbell? Hang on, I was looking up North Carolina.
I'm sorry, Chris. Don't worry about it. No, they went 0-2 against Duke, but they hadn't played since March.
Yeah, here, I'm on it now.
I think one of the games was like 4-1. I think NC State.
They lost 4-0 to Duke. Then they lost 11-3 to Duke. Then they beat NC State 5-4.
See, there you go. Not only did they hang around, Chris, you know what they did? They won.
They won, straight up.
Two great nicknames, the Camels and the Wolf Pack.
They got swept by St. John. They opened up their season. They lost 4 in a row, but they lost 3 to St. John's, and they lost to East Carolina. Those are tournament teams.
Yes. St. John's, I believe, a 2.
Oh, there were also two other games they played against NC State. They lost 21-4 and 4-1.
All right. Hey, but if you're Campbell, he'll taking 1 out of 3 against them.
Those were also like early in the year when they probably saw NC State's frontline pitching. Later on in the year when they beat them, you know, that was in the heart of conference play. NC State probably did like a Johnny Holstaff thing. But, hey, they beat them anyway, 5-4. They lost 2 out of 3 to NC State.
It's baseball, and, you know, it'd be nice. Georgia's been weird this year in the first inning. It's like we were struggling. Then we had the streak starting at Alabama where he scored in the first inning, I think like 7 out of 8 games and 6 in a row. Then we had a stretch where we didn't score in the first inning in 13 out of 14 games. And then against Arkansas, we had success early in the game. So it'd be nice to get off to a good – so I'm not saying to go out there and score 4 runs or even that you have to score, but it'd be nice to start to put a little pressure on them in the first inning.
Yeah, for the underdog, because the longer you go where,
absolutely,
you know, even if the game's scoreless, the longer you go, then the more that they start to believe. But, you know, they're coming in, yeah, as the big underdog in this game, and they've got to play the home team. They're the 4 seed. So, you know, if Georgia comes right out in the bottom of the first and puts some runs on the board, that would, you know, help serve the purpose of maybe zapping them of some belief that they've got a chance to win that game. And, you know, I think would also – you know, whatever tension there might be, maybe cut some of it. Because, again, I mean, Georgia is coming off an appearance last week in the SEC tournament where the offense was certainly silent. And, you know, you hope that, all right, now that the postseason has started, that this team hadn't hit a wall or something like that. So if Georgia goes out and struggles to hit the ball tomorrow, then, I mean, then doubt starts to creep in.
Chris, in 2008, 10 years ago, the unbelievable team we had, when NC State won Game 2 in the Super Regional to force the decisive Game 3 with the home team for that one, we scored 9 in the first inning. Now, I'm not saying Georgia's going to go out and do that, and that was a phenomenal team, obviously, in 08. But that was just one of those, like, no, you're not going to come in here and win.
And, yeah, and any tension that there might have been from this do-or-die game where Georgia was the home team, it was gone. I mean,
right,
you were basically celebrating after the end of the first inning that
yes,
you're going back
we'll
to Omaha.
At that
yeah.
point.
And they had Russell Wilson.
Take that,
yeah,
Russell Wilson.
Yeah. More bad news for Russell Wilson. Brian Schottenheimer is now his offensive coordinator.
Might just be one where he can just call his own plays.
Who were some of the guys that played for us on offense that year?
Well, before he got hurt, you know, we had both Chubb and Michelle. Had Malcolm Mitchell,
yeah.
Terry Godwin.
Isaiah Wynn was on that team.
Isaiah Wynn, Isaiah McKenzie.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot of guys in the NFL.
And we had a lousy offense.
I think we finished 9th or 10th in the league that year on offense.
It was lousy. Remember we kept running those plays against Missouri?
Yeah, where we were trying to get
passes.
At that point, it was Godwin as a freshman to block, and they had big physical DBs. Like that play's not working.
Let's stop that one.
Yeah, well, we won in the end though,
9-6.
Yeah.
Mm.
A win is a win.
Not always.
Jeff, moving on to the 5 at 5. Yesterday, I asked you an SEC specific question about brand new head coaches. So let's take it national today. First year head coach that you think is kind of under the most first year pressure to have a good season. That there's not like a lot of wiggle room with the fan base. That they're fired up and you better win and win now, or else we're gonna can you.
It's not quite Scott Frost because they've been
– and he's a Nebraska guy.
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
And I think they understand because Central Florida went from, 0-12 just a couple of years ago.
Yeah. He's going to be good there. I don't know that they're going to get back to, like, national prominence, but
he'll be good.
Yeah. He's a good coach.
And they're in the right division
yeah.
in the Big Ten. I'll say it's between Chip Kelly, although Rosen not being there might help lessen the pressure some. To me, it's Willie Taggart. Because he is still – I know Florida State stunk last year.
They got players.
They got players.
Yeah. What about – now, the thing with Herm Edwards at Arizona State is the guy who hired him is not going to admit his mistake immediately. But, like, there's no way they're not terrible. Right?
What did we say? We were looking at them in December when he got – what did we say, 2-10?
I think that was it. And I could give you a refresher course on their schedule, and but hey, I remember not seeing a lot of wins on
it. I mean, hey, and if they wind up going 8-4, he'll be coach of the year.
I'd give it to him if I'm right now. Yeah, I'm thinking that UT San Antonio.
That's not easy.
They host Michigan State.
That's a loss.
They're at San Diego State.
That's a loss.
They're at Washington.
That's a loss.
They host Oregon State, who also has a new coach.
They got a chance to win.
They're at Colorado.
Loser.
Home Stanford.
Loser.
At USC.
Loser.
Home Utah.
Loser.
Home UCLA.
Possible.
At Oregon.
Lose.
At Arizona.
Lose. I mean, it's at best, they're like 4-8.
Yeah.
Unless Jake the Snake Plumber comes back and suits up for him.
I'm just – there's no way this guy at like – what is he now? He's like 66 or something.
It was a crazy
Who's
hire.
Never coached in college. He's been yelling at people on TV for years.
And I like Herm Edwards. I thought he was great on TV. He was a good pro coach, but
– But is the pressure less on him because nobody believes he's going to be any good?
Yes.
Yeah. But Willie Taggart's in a situation – I mean, Florida State's got –
Yeah.
They got people.
And I think there'll be a race, too, between Willie Taggart and Jimbo. Who will be good first? My bet's on Florida State.
What? Why? Because they're in an easier division?
Yes.
I mean, they got to deal with Clemson.
And Louisville, but it's still – it ain't the SEC West.
No. Well, I mean, you got Saban.
I mean, I just – with Jimbo Fisher, too, and I think our friend Tim Bryan, our resident Florida State fan, even raised a question. Now, they did have an excellent season 2 years ago, won that great game against Michigan in the Orange Bowl when Dalvin Cook played great. But you start looking at it, and you look at Jimbo's record, all of a sudden you take those two Jameis Winston years out, and you start wondering, was this more Jameis Winston – or Jimbo?
Well, the last 2 years they went 8-8 in the ACC. I think. They were a 500 team, including getting just crushed by Boston College last season, which should never happen.
And the year 2 years ago when they won the Orange Bowl, I mean they lost to Louisville 63-10.
Yeah, no, that's one hire where I don't believe it's a – I mean, the guys won a national championship, so it feels like
– It's not a slam dunk.
It's not a slam dunk that they've upgraded at head coach. I don't think Kevin Sumlin was a bad head coach. He ended up just becoming a victim of winning at Alabama in his first season there.
So then, I mean, is Jimbo the answer then? Because let's say they go 8-4. It's like, we've been doing this.
It's the same thing.
You know, maybe not this year. If they go 8-4, 7-5 this year, do it again next year, the Heat's really going to get ramped up.
Right. I mean, I guess like in all these guys are going to have the benefit of, all right, we'll give him a time to recruit his own guys, and at least with Taggart, too.
Until you lose to like Texas San Antonio or something.
I mean, that's the thing with Taggart. Unless he loses, you know, they get crushed by Boston College or they lose to Syracuse or something.
Right.
I think, I mean, most level-headed people, and, you know, we're college football fans, so that's
we're not
level-headed, but. You do have to understand, like, okay, so Clemson's still better than we are. We get that.
Right.
But they shouldn't be losing to, like, Syracuse or BC or anything like
that. Yeah, when Boston College beat them 35-3, you know, there's something else going on there.
Yeah, and I think we saw it at the end, how it played out, is Jimbo ended up, he tossed his Christmas tree out on the side of the road, and he was gone to College Station with boots, putting those boots on.
Yeah, he went through that divorce was pretty nasty, too. So I'm
sure
that
got ugly.
He was just ready to leave town.
Well, like, here's like what would be acceptable. Heck, I don't – I mean, would even if they open up on Labor Day against Virginia Tech, that's at home. Like, if they lose their first game, like a home game to Virginia Tech, is it already kind of like you shouldn't be losing at home to Virginia Tech?
They're at least a respectable ACC opponent.
At Syracuse.
Got to win.
Although Clemson lost there last year.
They did. But that's a game they got to win.
Then they're at Louisville and at Miami.
What? They play three straight road games?
No, they got Northern Illinois in between. I'm kind of avoiding
them. They played an Orange Bowl, too.
They did. Against Florida State. Wake Forest.
Need to win that one.
Clemson.
Probably a loss there.
At NC State, at Notre Dame.
That's a tough schedule.
Then you got BC and then the Mighties. Both at home.
8-4, 9-3.
Yeah.
They've got players, though. That's a thing.
Yeah, although they're DeAndre Francois. Have they? Is what's his dealer? The Tallahassee PD? They sweep that under the rug too.
I don't know.
Dealing drugs out of his apartment or something?
Was that wrong?
Allegedly.
But you know, it's a thing too. Like when he went down, and I get it. Anybody, if you lose your quarterback, of course, Georgia won the SEC championship.
That's why it's not they had to play a freshman at quarterback last year. We didn't use that as an excuse.
No. And I get it. It's going to affect you. But, I mean, my thinking on that is it's not like Florida State hasn't been recruiting good quarterbacks.
Freshmen or no freshmen, they shouldn't be getting blown out by Boston College.
No.
There were other problems
if
there.
If you lose a game 24-21 on the road on a Friday night, backup quarterback, okay. 35-3.
Yeah. There's something else going on.
Yes.
And there was. Moving on to the 5-5, Jeff, the NBA Finals start tonight. Now, I was looking, 24 out of 24 ESPN experts say Golden State is going to win, and like only one of them even thinks it's I think one of them said a 7-game series, and maybe like all but two of them thought it was going to be anything other than a sweep. Now, nobody's asked the two real experts.
Right. Who called this series last June?
We had this predicted and locked in. Yeah, Friday, June, we've nailed it already, but what do we think?
Warriors in five.
So we join the ESPN experts.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you feel like, am I on to the idea of like 2 days here, Cleveland's been sitting around hearing about blowout, they're the biggest underdogs ever. Like tonight's game might be the sneaky one where it's kind of tight.
Could be. I think one of the first two games is going to be tight and Golden State will smoke them in the other one. I think for Cleveland to win this series, it's just follow the lead of the 1960 Pittsburgh Pirates when they beat the Yankees. Pirates won four very close games, including Bill Mazeroski in Game 7, and the Yankees blew Pittsburgh out three times.
Well, and also follow the lead of the 0-0-0 Sixers who stole Game 1 from the Lakers because Iverson scored like 50 or something.
What's your strategy? Put it up, LeBron. But they are. I mean, LeBron's going to get doubled and tripled. He's got to have the supporting actors playing big. And to me, maybe the most important guy for them is going to be Kyle Korver because he can shoot. And if he's hot, Golden State's going to have to guard him.
Well, between him, J.R. Smith, and then even, like, you know, Jeff Green, it's like one of those guys has got to have the stroke. Maybe not, though. Am I crazy to want the 12.5 tonight? Probably.
If I were advising you, Chris, I would advise you no play tonight.
Feel it out.
Then on game two, if it's close tonight, go blowout. If it's blowout tonight, it might be blowout again. But I would say closer in game two. Tonight would seem to be the better chance because of what you said of it being a close game.
Maybe I should just sit back and wait and take the Golden State third quarter line.
No, that's money. What about a Golden State Golden Knights parlay?
I don't know. I'm kind of down on our Golden Knights now. That's the franchise that's just done nothing but let us down in all of our months of fandom.
Can I give us a tangent real quick? Thanks to our buddy Chris Gilmore.
Okay.
Said Fresno State made $90,000 last year off of selling beer at football games. We can make that in a quarter.
Yeah. I don't know. The SEC's – I don't know what they're – I suspect maybe Georgia's issue is, like, maybe we just have too many, like, we don't know who to give the contract to.
So we got so many great and wonderful supporters.
Yeah.
Who own distributors.
But, no, I would think it would be profitable.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is crazy that they'd be so resistant to it because the SEC and these schools, they all seem to love money. They're even warming up to the idea of legalized gambling as a potential new revenue stream. All right, there's your 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.